Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Chinese began coming to the United States in the 1850s. Like other immigrants, seeking to escape troubles in their homeland and improve their lives. Their labor helped build a lot of America's infrastructure, including the first transcontinental railroad. Here on the Lower Columbia, they worked in the canneries and the mills. But when jobs became scarce, the Chinese became the scapegoats. They faced racism, discrimination, expulsion, and sometimes violence. And in 1882, a federal law called the Chinese Exclusion Act was enacted, prohibiting all immigration of Chinese laborers. The act hung around in some form until 1943, and in many places Chinese were prohibited from owning property. Many Chinese left the country, but others persevered, working, starting small businesses, raising families, and educating their children. Last month, the Lower Columbia Diversity Project joined with Encore to hear from members of two such families and from a young woman who was born in China and adopted as an infant by an American couple. This morning, we'll hear excerpts from that discussion. The guests, in the order in which we will hear them, are David Lum, Ronald Law, Pam Lum, and Emily Severson. Here's David Lum.
My father was born in Canton, China, in a small village that kind of reminded me, because I have gone back there, it kind of reminded me of Brown's Meat, Oregon. Well, anyway, he was born in 1872, and he came to America around, there was an exclusion of Chinese, as he mentioned, this is history. Between 1880 to 1900, there were no Chinese that could be, they couldn't immigrate anymore because all the jobs at that time were hard to get, and so they were saving it for all the white people. Anyway, my father came in the early 1900s, and he did not have a suitcase and traveler's checks and a visa. I'm sure he left, this is what I was told, and he, anyway, he came to America, and he had to walk, I know it was about 100 miles to the seashore, to the seaport, and he had to hoof it down there. I don't think there was cars or a bus or anything that brought him down there. And then he went to the shore, and he worked on the waterfront until he got passage to America. Got on a boat, had to work on a boat, and of course, those ships didn't come over. It took about 30 days, I had heard. It takes about 30 days to get here. And when he got here, he went to Oakland for several years before he got enough money to come to Astoria. In 1902 to 4, I don't think there was many cars. There were no buses. The only way you could come to Astoria was by rail or boat, or you could come by horseback. And he lived here for many years, and he had a family back in China, and they sent money back there because he did not want to become a citizen, because all Chinese at that time that came from China wanted to make money, make enough to go home and maybe buy an apartment or not a farm, but to retire. And if they died here, they were to dig their bones up and send them back to China. My father lived here until about 10 years later, in 1914. But since he wasn't going to go back to China, because he had a little grocery store, it's called Lum Quing Grocery on 6th and Bond Street. It was on 9th and Bond Street here. But when the fire came in 1922, it wiped everything downtown, so he moved over. And that 6th and Bond was the corner where the trolleys came. There's tracks there. And we dug them up when I built the store there in 1970s. Anyway, sent for my mother. My mother was born in 1898, so she was 16 years old. Did not know how to read or write Chinese, and she did not know how to read or write English. When she was born, she was born at home, and she did not have papers. That she was born in America, so she had to retake exam. They didn't examine them, but they had to get some prominent people to say, I've known that Mrs. Lum lived here or was born here. They had to sign papers, and so finally she got her citizenship papers. And the reason why she knew how to read and write is because the First Baptist Church here, two blocks from here, took her in and wanted to make her a Christian. She became the congregate couple of ladies, Mrs. F.C. Green. I remember them because that was during my time. And they taught her how to read and write English when I was going to school. So we didn't study together because I didn't study very hard. But anyway, she became very prominent in the First Baptist Church. And of course, I had the great fortune of being raised in a Christian environment. And I thank God that I was. And all the good things I do is from being raised as a Christian. I do a lot of things that maybe are questionable, and I have to blame the guy downstairs. Well, anyway, you can imagine my father was close to 30 years older than my mother. And we had six children, three boys and three girls, and I happened to be the sixth son. They named the boys only. And you'd think that was kind of unusual, but you got to remember, in America, women couldn't vote until 1920s. I could tell you a lot of stories about being Chinese. I looked at the brighter side of it, that my mom, I know we never went out to restaurants because Davy had to go to college. My father died when I was 11 or 12 years old, and I had a sister 13, no Social Security. My mother was widowed at 46 with no Social Security. And my sister became a pharmacist and I became a school teacher. I taught high school in Echo, Oregon for 3 years. And I came to Portland, wanted lots of children, and I had four children. I'm blessed. I have four children and 10 grandchildren. I was born in 33, so in 1940, when Pearl Harbor was bombed, the way they got papers out, they didn't have internet. Of course, they didn't have television. So they called little Davy Lum and all the little guys. And you can imagine, I was 8 years old, seven or eight. I was already a paper boy, so I must have been delivering papers at six or seven. And they said, you'll have to come down. We want you to come down and sell extras. I didn't know what an extra was. I didn't even know what war meant. I didn't even know where Pearl Harbor was. And I didn't know that I didn't even know where Japan was. In those days, you were lucky. We had a radio that scratched, very scratched, you know, I remember when Roosevelt spoke, they had the radio going on. It was scratchy. You could hardly hear him talking, but everybody kind of rallied to whatever he said. And and my paper was right down here in the bathrooms and the beer taverns. There were a lot of men here. All the Scandinavian people were all men. All the Chinese had bunkhouses with men only, as she recalled, because they were sending money home. So there were all the Finns that lived in the west side town, and Norwegian, everybody. They were mostly men. We had bought a little house for $500 down in Seaside, Oregon. And I had a paper route down there. I wanted to buy a Schwinn bike. And so I had a paper route early in the morning, Oregonian. And every morning I'd come by, the Times Theater had a coffee shop there, or a little fountain there. They didn't have any booths, it was just I don't know if any of you remember this, but I used to go get a hamburger. It used to cost, I think it was 20 cents, because you could buy a White House hamburger square, it was 5 cents. This was, of course, this was in the 40s and 30s, 40s, excuse me. Well, anyway, there was a sign up there, and I could, of course, I must have been eight or nine because I could read it, and it said whites only. So I went back, and my mom would say, I said to her, what does that mean? What do they think that sign meant? She said, Davy, I don't want you to go in that restaurant. They don't want you to go in there. So I was not only taught by the outsiders that I was Chinese. My mother didn't think we were white, so she said, don't go in their restaurant. But the hamburger was overwhelming. I'd come by a few days later. I thought, well, Mom would never know it anyway because she never counted the money I made in the paper route. So I bought a hamburger and I came home and she'd say, Davy, you want some breakfast? No, I'm not hungry today, Mom. Come here, Davy. She said, I can smell the onions now. Where do you get those?
I'm from a family of six kids. We're all born, raised in an Astoria, Warrenton area. My father was Duncan Law, and if any of you lived here very long, you probably recognize the name. He was 92 years old when he passed away this year. And my mom is Flora Lee Law. She was born and raised in Astoria, and she'll be 87 next month. Out of the six kids, we all went to college. In fact, I think everyone here is related to Oregon State.
Go Beavs!
My dad taught at Oregon State. He went to school, graduated, and came back to Astoria and worked for Oregon State for 40 years. But at one time, out of six kids, we had all six of us in college, and five were going to Oregon State, and the last one was going to Stanford.
Wow. So,
yeah, I was the only one of the six kids who chose to stay in Astoria. I went out of my way to come back to Astoria because I really like it here. I graduated in mechanical engineering, and it's a little bit hard to find jobs in this area related to that field. I worked for Carruthers Equipment for about 15 years until it got bought and sold, and things changed quite a bit. But I managed to stay in Astoria. My wife has an accounting firm locally, so that it's the breadwinner now. My wife is first generation. Her parents immigrated in, I think, in the 1950s. My kids are fourth generation on my dad's side, and on my mom's side, they're fifth generation. My maternal great-grandmother was born in Alameda, California in 1866. And one of the unique things I understand is that she spoke perfect English, which was very rare for a person of Chinese descent. And I assume that she was there because her father was either related to the railroad or the gold rush. Both my parents' families immigrated or migrated to Oregon and then to Astoria, and I believe it was primarily because of the salmon industry, the salmon boom that happened. When the salmon industry took off and the technology and development of canned salmon, it was really timely for the Chinese immigrants because there were large populations that were left over wondering what to do after the railroads were completed and the gold rush and the mining were kind of dwindling. So about that time, that's when the salmon industry started really boom in this area. Salmon canneries required a large workforce of cheap and dependable workers, and the Chinese would really fit that bill real well. And I think most of you probably know at its peak, Astoria was considered the salmon capital of the world, and I think at one point during the swell, I think there was over 2,500 Chinese in this area. And I think that amounted to close to a quarter of the population. And then the Chinese population in Astoria peaked around the turn of the century, and then it tapered off for several reasons. The reasons I think of are salmon population couldn't sustain the demand, so cannery numbers actually dwindled. I think at one point there were over two dozen salmon canneries just in the lower Columbia. Then there was the China Exclusion Act of 1882, which limited the number of Chinese immigrants. And then there were technological improvements, which required a lot less lot smaller crews. I think I don't know if very many of you know about how the salmon canning worked, but they developed a machine called the Iron Chink because it replaced so many of the Chinese workers. I think it could do like what 20 Chinese workers could do. So that's when that happened. That really kind of left it so that the Chinese didn't have much to do. As much to do. And also, because of the Chinese Exclusion Act, Chinese laborers, I think Uncle Dave said, there was largely probably over 90% male. And they were beginning to get old, and they couldn't work in the canneries anymore. So a lot of them either moved back to China or found something else to do. Dad started working in the salmon canneries when he was 13 or 14. And he told me his original wage was 13 cents an hour. But he was still able to put himself through college. And after graduating from Oregon State, he returned to Astoria and took his one and only job at the seafood laboratory here. And he really loved that job. He got to work with people in the fishing industry. I think one of his first experiments he did was during World War II, they really were short of vitamin A. I think the pilots needed, they wanted it for their eyesight. And so he would take the dogfish and extract the liver, take the livers out of the dogfish to extract the vitamin A out of it. And then eventually that became synthesized so that there was no need anymore to do that. But that was one of his first experiments. My mom's dad was a Chinese contractor. He started it for a short time around World War II because he worked at Point Adams. It was primarily a Japanese crew. And then when the war broke out, all the Japanese crew were relocated and interned Idaho and Eastern Oregon, I think. So they needed a lot of workers out at Point Adams, and so my grandfather actually recruited my dad, and that's where my dad met my mom out at Point Adams. I actually worked in the salmon canning industry too, but I worked for Bumblebee, which was based in Astoria, but I worked up in Naknek. And I don't know, I think there's still quite a few fishermen around here that go up to Naknek. I worked there for 5 summers. There was a large contingent of Chinese college-age kids working there, and they were mostly hired by Uncle Johnny, which Uncle Dave's brother. We all called him the Chinese Connection because he really believed that the Chinese were still the most dependable and hard workers. So he went out of his way to find anybody. If you had Chinese in your blood, you're a good chance he could get you on up in Alaska. And I have one other kind of interesting story. There is a contract laborer here named Lam Wong. He was a very successful Chinese labor contractor, and he began his partnership with another Chinese guy named Ah Dog. And their business became known as Dog Lam and was one of the largest Chinese contractors during their period in Astoria. Their primary business was to supply the Chinese labor to the canneries, and in addition to supplying the manpower, he would provide room and board and then take care of their money for them. And in return, he'd take a little bit of their paycheck. But he became very wealthy. He was one of the first Chinese to own a house in Astoria. In the early 1900s, most Chinese couldn't afford or allowed by law to purchase a house. So he kind of skirted the law a little bit. He hired a local attorney to buy the house for him. But it became his house. It's up on 6 and Grand. Well, when my wife and I decided we'd outgrown our first house, we were getting ready for our second kid, and we only had a one-bedroom house already. So we were looking around, and we really liked this house. And it turned out that it was my relative's house, Wong Lam. And my parents actually lived in there. My mother lived in there for a period of time when he went back to China.
Hi, I'm Pam, and I thought I would share some stories about me growing up in the area. As my dad shared, we have a family of 6. I have 4 siblings. I do have an older brother, Greg, and my 2 younger sisters, Julie and Lori, who I work with at Lum's Auto Center. So you may know of the Lum girls, who says girls can't sell cars. So growing up, family was very important to us. Spending time together, being together, getting along was something that my parents really taught us. I think it's been very good for upbringing. It's we're able to work together every day. We work together and we play together. Growing up, we spent many hours around the dinner table. It seemed like we were always around food. And our aunts, my dad referenced, they would come to dinner. My mom would always cook for us. And we would end the evening playing Scrabble, playing games. And that was a time when I learned from my aunts stories about their upbringing, and then we would share things about our upbringing, and words that meant something in our day was something different in their day. So it was a great opportunity to get to know them. My mom has been a testament to us getting along and really having fun together. She does cook dinner for us still. We get together probably twice a week, typically Monday and Tuesday nights, depending on everybody's schedule, but everyone's invited. My sisters bring all their kids over, and it is a celebration every night, and then we head home, and so they can get ready for school the next day, and it's a great time. I don't know if it's something that we actually said or not, but we don't talk about business in the evening. It's all about just hanging out and laughing together and enjoying each other's company.
And crying.
The kids cry. So our family is very, very supportive. Education. I went to Oregon State. Education was very important to us. Older brother, and my sister Julie went to Oregon State. The youngest, unfortunately, strayed a little. She went to a school down a little bit south of Oregon State. And luckily for us, our uncle did run the cannery in Alaska, so we were able to have a summer job. Working that summer job in Alaska allowed for us to pay for our schooling for the entire year, plus some. So in the day, college was maybe $400 a term, I think, but we could make a few thousand dollars in Alaska during the summer, so it was very, very nice. We were very fortunate. And as Ronnie mentioned, there were a lot of Chinese people up there. I think it was because there were a lot of relatives. So obviously, Uncle Johnny's nieces and nephews had the opportunity to work there, as long as my mom's nieces and nephews, and so we did have a lot of relatives and a lot of people, community from Astoria. Uncle Johnny felt like it was very important to get an education, so he allowed us all to go to Alaska to work so we could afford it, which was great. Also, I thought I would share with you, I have an aunt, Bertha Seigert, who is my mother's older sister, and she was able to go to college as well. She graduated in 48. She unfortunately couldn't get a job in teaching in Oregon. She shared with me that she would interview, and they said, "We'd really like to hire you. Unfortunately, you're Chinese. There aren't any Chinese teachers. We don't want to be the first one to hire. We don't know how it would be accepted." So she kept interviewing. She was able to get a job in Washington as a teacher in the big city of Kathlamet. So she taught there. She actually was the first Chinese teacher in Washington, and that was in 48. She lived there for 4 years and moved back to Portland and raised her family there. She also shared with me that in the 60s, which doesn't seem that long ago because that's when I was born in the 60s. So they wanted to move into a new neighborhood. And it's actually the neighborhood where she resides now. So she's been there almost 50 years. And in order for them to purchase the home, they had to get the neighborhood approval because they were Chinese. So it doesn't seem that long ago, but those were some of the things that they were faced with.
Hi, I'm Emily. I'm 17. I was born in China. I was adopted when I was 8 months old by my parents that are not Chinese. They kind of look like it. Because my mom has red hair. But I've lived here ever since I was 9 months old, 8 months, 9 months old. I went to kindergarten, junior high, elementary school, and high school at Warrenton. I just graduated in June as valedictorian of my class. I was the 2012 Regatta Queen. I was on the National Honor Society. I was vice president of our Key Club. I was on student council and some other things I just can't remember. I danced at Maddox Dance Studio since I was 3, and I don't do that anymore. I leave for Oregon State on the 23rd, and I'm going for a degree in chemical engineering and a minor in business management, and that's all. Oh, and I don't have any siblings because I like to be the only one.
My wife's out here, Shirley, and I. Our common goal in life was to make sure that our 4 children went through college. And now, of course, I had a car dealership, and we were going there, and I think that we were under, but we didn't know it. So we never gave our kids a car to go to school. And the first year we said, we might let you have a used car the second year if you stay in school. You don't have to get A's or B's. If you can get back in school the second year, we'll let you get in. But finally, when they all graduated, it just took a long time, you know, like 8 or 10 years with 4 different children, you know. It was a lot easier than I thought it was because of my brother and because of our people rallied around us that helped us along the way. So I didn't get here by myself.
That was David Lum. We also heard from Ronnie Law, Pam Lum, and Emily Searson. And that's the Human Beat for this month. I'm Roger Rocca. Thanks for listening.